Bless you all. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's great to be here this morning, and this is a powerful time that we're in together, I think, on this planet right now. And I think in the hearts of humanity, there is perhaps stronger than ever the yearning for peace. So I'm glad that we can come together like this and focus our attention on that which is most essential and most powerful, and really the truth that we are, which is the inner Christ nature. The foundation of the unity movement, I think, is this basic teaching that the awakened consciousness that we truly are lives within us as the Christ. And I really love this behind us, the stained glass, because there's this sort of an outer manifestation of this inner dimension of ourselves. And the mudra that Jesus is portrayed here, the hand gesture, is the mudra of giving. And the idea is really that we're here on this planet to give, to be givers. And how do we give? We give by discovering that which is unique within us that we're here to bring forth, and that as we give of that which is within us that is unique, our unique creative capacity, we begin to connect with the joy that we truly are. That there's something about fulfilling our potential as givers that is extremely satisfying, and it gives us the sense of joy that we, I think, know that we are at the core of our being. Madeline and I have been traveling now for, quite a while, since the early 90s, to Unity churches, and I think it's really helpful to remember that as we're gathered here this morning, we're part of a larger movement, the Unity movement, which is all over the North America and the world now, and other movements as well, that I think are coming from the deepest part of our human spiritual yearning that sees with the eyes of inclusion. Instead of with the old eyes, in a sense, the old way of seeing, which was an eye of exclusion, to see with an eye of inclusion, to include all living beings in the sphere of our compassion. I remember when I was a kid, I was raised in a church in New England where I was taught that if I would just believe this certain creed, the sort of exclusive creed that was just for us, that I would get to go to this exclusive heaven that was just for us. You know, and this idea of exclusion, I think, gets its talons into us at an early age. But I think the foundation, really, of spiritual growth and of our spiritual path is in questioning the underlying assumptions of our culture that bring this sense of exclusion, that we care about certain beings, but we don't care about others, and to begin to include more and more so that we become a force on this planet for healing, for love, for kindness, and for blessing. And I think that's really the foundation of everything. The basic spiritual teachings are very simple. You know, the fundamental teachings are very simple, and they come from this idea that when we show love to others, we become a force for peace. In the ancient Jewish writings, there are teachings that focus on this. Come, let us go up into the mountain of the Lord and walk the paths of the Most High. We shall beat our swords into plowshares and our spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they make war any more, and none shall be afraid, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. These are powerful words, and I think that idea that none shall be afraid is very powerful, because in many ways there's nothing more frightening than war, than human beings massed against each other, attacking and trying to harm each other. And so I think this yearning to get beyond war, to find peace, is so deep in us, to get beyond this being afraid of each other. And one of the interesting things, I have a book that I wrote called The World Peace Diet, and I'll be actually giving a number of lectures in Cincinnati while I'm here. One of the things that I discovered in my research is that the oldest word for war on this planet is the old Sanskrit word, goes back tens of thousands of years, gavya, which means the desire for more cattle, the desire for more cows. And there's this sense, I think, at a deep level that when we human beings started to look with eyes of ownership, of animals. If we began then to own human beings. Slavery began. We began to have the domination of nature, the domination of the feminine, of women, and the domination of animals. And that this whole mentality of domination created a wealthy elite and a way of living where we, in a sense, when we're born into this culture, we're forced to look in a certain way, but that we can begin by transforming our consciousness to look with eyes that have love and compassion and caring for all living beings, for other human beings, and not only for other human beings, but for other sentient beings, for animals, for nature, for this whole beautiful planet, and begin to behave in ways that are ethical towards them, in other words, to protect their interests. And that this has been a universal spiritual teaching from the very beginning. We find it if we look deeply into the teachings of Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Taoism, Hinduism, all the traditions emphasize that any being who can feel pain, that we're called to honor them and protect them and to be kind to them. In the Christian tradition, Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be known as the children of God." And he went on to say that if someone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. Whatever we would most want to have done to us, we should do to others. Now, these fundamental teachings really show a mentality of love and kindness, that this is really the foundation of the spiritual teachings, is love and kindness for all living beings. So I think today, when we yearn so strongly for peace, when we see the results of a mentality that pervades our culture in many ways, of looking with eyes that see beings to be used, and the conflict and violence that causes, that we're called in a deep level to question that and to begin to live our lives as prayers for peace and compassion for all life. And I think in my own life, I remember as I was growing up in Concord, Massachusetts, which is where I was born and raised, and I feel like I have kind of a connection at a deep level with the Transcendentalist movement, which is in many ways the roots of the Unity movement, some ways anyway. The teachings of Emerson, you know, I learned to swim in Walden Pond and went to Thoreau School and Alcott School and was born in Emerson Hospital. Anyway, these guys were really emphasizing the importance of looking with a transcendental perspective. It was really a revolution, I think, in many ways at that time, in the mid-1800s. They began to bring for the first time the teachings from Asia, the teachings from the Taoist and the Buddhist and the Hindu traditions, as well as going more deeply, I think, into the teachings of our own Western tradition, Judaism and Christianity, to live nonviolence and peace and compassion for all life. And the idea of God, for example, in the Taoist tradition as principle, it's very powerful. Or in the Buddhist tradition of God as mind and the consciousness. And this idea that what we are, as Emerson said, is consciousness. And that we are eternal consciousness, it transcendent, that we transcend the mere material level. This is an extremely liberating and profound idea that I think our culture needs to incorporate at a deeper level, because in many ways we've been taught to look with eyes that just see matter. We see a material thing. We see someone, you know, as a piece of meat or as something we can use in some way that we can dominate or use. And we're taught in many ways to look at ourselves that way. So I think at its very heart of hearts, our culture yearns for a revolution. I think we know when we look out at the world, and what we're doing to the oceans and the rivers and to each other and to the rainforests, that we need more than just a few little minor adjustments. We need a major change in our mentality. And this is what Jesus, I think, was pointing at, a mentality of giving instead of a mentality of taking, a mentality of honoring and respecting the least of these, you know, those who are most vulnerable in our hands. And that as we begin to question the underlying assumptions of our culture, we can begin this transcendentalist revolution that really began, I think, you know, thousands of years ago. It's come through the ages, and the Unity tradition is another manifestation of that. And I remember when I went away to college, I read a book. Some of you may have heard this book called Cosmic Consciousness. Has anyone heard of that? It was written about over 100 years ago by a fellow from Canada, And he said most people attain what he called self-consciousness, which is the consciousness of that I'm a self, a separate self. And that consciousness is really, in many ways, I think, responsible for so much of our suffering, because we see my interests as being more important than the interests of others, and so I'm willing to harm others to protect my interests and harm others to get what I want. And when everyone does that, we create misery for each other. And so he said, though, that certain people had attained what he called cosmic consciousness, was like a quantitatively higher level of consciousness, an awakening where they saw directly that what they are and what others are has the same source. The sense that my joy and my peace and my happiness comes in blessing others, that I'm here to bless the world, and that the more I encourage others, the more I feel encouraged, the more I bless others, the more I feel blessed. And the greatest joy that I can have is to be a blessing and to find the unique way that I'm here and called to be a blessing in this world. And I remember when I read this book, and he said that, you know, there are certain people who have attained cosmic consciousness, such as Jesus and the Buddha and Muhammad and Paul, and Walt Whitman was one of them, he said. And I remember, God, I loved his poetry so much, but I remember having this passion inside of me to attain cosmic consciousness, that more and more I thought, there's, you know, the rest of it is just, you know, it's not really satisfying. And I talked about this a little bit to my brother, Ed. I said, Ed, have you heard about cosmic consciousness? And he hadn't heard about it, so I told him. And then we got, both of us got really excited about this attaining cosmic consciousness, and we decided we would make a plan, because the question is, well, then how do you do it? You know, how do you actually attain cosmic consciousness? And so we thought what we would do is we would go to California, because we knew they had more cosmic consciousness there than they did where we were in Massachusetts, you know. So this was 1975, and a lot of stuff was happening in San Francisco. And so we did. I graduated from college. I said goodbye to my parents, my brother and I did, and we walked down the driveway, and we headed west, had some fresh baked cookies from my mother, and we were going to find cosmic consciousness. And after about a month or so, we got as far as Buffalo, New York. And we got to Buffalo, and we realized, you know, it really was an inner journey. We didn't have to go to California. And so we began to just walk south, because it was October, and I figured, all right, I can figure this out. It's October, you're in Buffalo, you better head south. So we headed south, and we just kind of got rid of things on the way. And as we walked, we weren't really walking with any outer purpose, in a sense, because we realized that the whole journey to cosmic consciousness was an inner journey. So we were doing this meditation practice of asking deeper and deeper, who am I? Who am I? This was a practice that was recommended by a teacher we heard about named Ramana Maharshi, who died, I guess, in the 50s. But he recommended just take this question deeper and deeper within yourself, who am I? And as I did that, I remember feeling more and more a connection with all of life, and the layers of armor started slowly coming off. And we walked all the way down through upstate New York and Pennsylvania into West Virginia, down to eastern Kentucky. And I remember when we got into West Virginia and eastern Kentucky, they told us, boys, you're in the Bible Belt. And being an Episcopalian from New England, I didn't really know what that meant, but I found out pretty fast. That meant they try to save you every night, you know. So we had quite an experience. But the people were wonderful, really, and we managed to get through. Eventually we got to the farm in Tennessee. The farm was a community. In 1975, there was about 900 people there, and it was the largest hippie commune in the world at that time, and they were pretty much all from California. So we met them in Tennessee. It was that feeling. But I remember when we got there, there was a sense of, we didn't stay. I eventually went on after a couple of months to we kept walking south to Alabama, and we found, believe it or not, a Zen center in Alabama, and that's where I ended up for a while, and then eventually got to California, and eventually to a Zen monastery in Korea. I shaved my head back in the 80s and lived as a Zen monk there, and had a chance to really focus on this project of attaining cosmic consciousness. And then after that, met Madeline in Switzerland. But the thing I want to just sort of close with here and emphasize is that I remember on this walk, when I was heading south, I would feel, for the first time in just my whole life, it seemed like, this spontaneous feeling of joy that would start just erupting inside of me, walking along, and I had no reason in the outer world to feel any joy. I mean, we had no money. We'd given away everything. I didn't have any extra clothes because if you're carrying them, pretty soon you don't need them. And so we didn't have, you know, and the thing was, the more I let go of, it seemed the happier I got. And pretty soon we were walking with almost nothing, but we didn't ever go hungry. There was always some miracle. I should write a book about it someday, but there was always something would happen. I remember one time we were just basically, it was the only time really but that we were actually hungry. We'd gone maybe a day or two. And I remember we were walking along this road and there was a sandwich just wrapped by the side of the road. And I remember I wasn't even surprised. It was like, oh, here it is, right here, you know. And so we've learned that sometimes the churches in these really fundamentalist little towns would ask us to come in and talk to the kids in Sunday school, and we would say to the kids, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and everything else shall be added unto you. And it was happening. I mean, I think if we just go for spiritual illumination and awakening, our other things will be taken care of. We're here on this planet to awaken spiritually. And when we do that, we become a force for healing, and we begin to tap in, I think, to the abundance of the universe. Because we're not here just to try to get something. We're here to give. You know, this is the thing. We're here to give. We're here to create a community of givers. And so that was what I realized, was that when we truly live our life, and I think that was what I was doing at that point. I mean, I was living my life. It was not the life that my father said I should do. No, no, no. Or my mother or the teachers or the billboards or the society. It was totally different. But it was in alignment with the purpose that I felt. So I think all of us, as we each day can get in touch with our intuition, this inner knowing that we all have, and this is, I'll be giving a workshop with Madeline this afternoon on developing intuition, but the idea is that all of us have within ourselves an inner knowing, which is wisdom that we can learn to connect with, that will help us to live our unique life. When we do that, we begin to connect with the inner joy that we are, and that intuition is the embodiment of not only our innate wisdom, but also the embodiment of our innate compassion. And that as we begin to let go of living in ways that cause suffering to others. And that was one of the things I realized, that I had been born in a culture that had basically forced me from the time I was a little kid to look at animals just as meat, for example. When I was at the farm, I found myself in a community of 1,000 people who were all vegans, actually. They didn't eat any animal foods. And there was this sense of looking in a new way and seeing in a new way and acting in a new way that gives freedom to us because we give freedom to others. So I would just want to encourage all of us to question the underlying assumptions of our culture, to, as Amy said, to be the change we want to see in the world. Actually, that's what Gandhi said, to be the change we want to see in the world, to connect with our inner intuitive knowing, to take time every day to meditate and do that connection, and then to live lives of kindness and compassion for all life, the ones that are most sensitive, that are most vulnerable in our hands, to especially give compassion to them. And I want to just close by thanking all of you for the efforts that you're making, because I know if you're in this room, you're in a Unity church, each one of you has a story that got you here. And those stories, it would be great to know those, because each one of you has had to question the underlying assumptions of our culture. So I want to just encourage all of us to continue to do that, and to create the community that we can be. Because I think when there's a group of people who are focused on attaining higher consciousness, cosmic consciousness, and bringing forth the inner Christ, a group of people multiplies that power far, far more than just an individual. And when we do that together, we create a field that just radiates into the whole world, into the whole planet, and helps uplift everyone. So please continue with this work you're doing. Question everything. And I hope that Madeline and I have a chance to see you later this afternoon and tomorrow, and we can go into these things a little more deeply. Bless you all. I love you all. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's so wonderful to just to sit back and be so beautifully fed by such a wonderfully full and spiritual message. Thank you so much.